It's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Purcell. Time to go on the money with Chris DeSimeo and his guest this morning, Alan Blinder, former vice chairman of the Federal Reserve and author of the new book, After the Music Stopped, The Financial Crisis, The Response, and the Work Ahead.
Well, we are still recovering and digging ourselves out of a very deep hole, which caved in beneath our feet about 5 years ago. It's hard to believe that the financial crisis that bottomed out in 2009 actually began more than 5 years ago. And it's a pleasure to welcome to the show Alan Blinder, who is the professor of economics and public affairs at Princeton University. His name may sound familiar to you because he was the vice chairman of the Federal Reserve's Board of Governors. He was a member of the President Clinton's Council of Economic Advisors and a frequent guest on CNBC, CNN, and PBS. And Alan, thanks so much for taking part of your Saturday to be with us.
Well, it's great to be here with you. Thank you.
You have a new book. You've written many books, but I'm holding in my hands your latest called After the Music Stopped, The Financial Crisis, The Response, and The Work Ahead. Just to review for a second, that quote sounds familiar. Could you spend a few minutes telling us the origins of that quote?
Yeah, I bet it sounds familiar. This was a takeoff on something that the then CEO of Citigroup, Chuck Prince, said in an interview to the Financial Times in July 2007, which, by the way, was about 1 month before the music stopped. And I won't get his quote exactly right, but the sense of it was, things are going to get very complicated when the music stops, but as long as the music is playing, we've got to get up and dance, referring to Citigroup.
Sure. And so, in other words,
they were dancing, and the music did stop pretty violently.
Right. So, in other words, we know that it shouldn't be a good thing necessarily be out on the dance floor, but as long as they're playing, we'll keep grinding out subprime mortgages and so forth.
Yeah, and it was, I thought that was emblematic of some of the bad attitudes that got us into this problem.
Well, sure, exactly. And in your book, After the Music Stopped, it's broken up into three big parts, large parts, A, what happened, how we got there, secondly, what we did about it, and finally, how to move forward. The short version of how exactly we got into this mess.
The short version would emphasize two things and then a bunch of things secondarily. One is the bubbles, both in housing, which is very well known. House prices just shot up in most areas of the country to undesirable and unsustainable heights. The second bubble I call the bond bubble, which is much less well known. This has to do with the notion that risk in lending was a thing of the past, and therefore the old-fashioned idea that, say, junk bonds should bear much higher interest rates than high-grade corporate bonds, that corporate bonds themselves should bear higher interest rates than treasury bonds, or maybe my least favorite example, that the sovereign bonds of Greece should have about the same interest rate as the sovereign bonds of Germany. All of these things were happening at the same time. It was like massive amnesia, people forgetting that the good times don't last forever. Couple that with leverage. So people are making leveraged bets, which pay off nicely on the upside. If the underlying asset, say a house, which you buy with almost no money down, or a bond or a stock or whatever it is you're buying, goes up a lot in value and you've leveraged your investment with borrowed money, you make a very high rate of return. And that's true. But what people forgot in the euphoria is if it turns around and goes down, you're in the soup. You might even be bankrupt.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was a huge amount of that, coupled with regulators that were looking the other way. Instead of saying, stop, 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 or we're going to hit you over the head, they just let it happen. With rating agencies that were looking at some of these Wall Street concoctions and saying, that's a AAA security. AAA means safe enough to recommend to your grandmother. Fortunately, I never recommended any of that. My grandparents weren't alive, to my mother. They weren't safe enough for purposes like that. And a host of other failings combined to create this kind of perfect storm.
Yeah. In your book, After the Music Stopped, you talk about not just the Fed, but the four different regulatory agencies charged with making sure that the banks were safe enough for your mom and dad and your grandparents. Wasn't it a fact that at some point before the music stopped that bank owners could actually lobby to be regulated by one agency over another, especially if it happened to be an agency where they knew somebody?
Oh, yeah. I mean, not lobby. I mean, they could go change their charter. You didn't have to have a federal charter, or you didn't have to have a state charter. Banks had choices, and indeed, there was a lot of slippage between having a regular commercial bank charter or having a thrift institution charter, which got you regulated by the Office of Thrift Supervision, which, by among other things, was regulating the AIG financial products, one of the real explosions in
the office
system, was not a very good regulator, to put it mildly, and which got abolished by Dodd-Frank, by the way. We don't have that anymore.
Okay.
With four bank regulators, you get the opportunities to shop around.
Wow. And so there were some people running both actual banks and then members of what you call the shadow banking system who could kind of choose, if they were in fact regulated at all, they could choose who they were regulated.
Yeah, a lot of those shadow banks just weren't regulated by anybody.
Right, and you describe that in the book about how many of the securities that got the legitimate banks or the real banks, the bank banks, into trouble actually weren't created by the bank banks. They were created by the shadow banking system. Is that banking system still around? Is it still lurking in the shadows?
Well, it is and it isn't, because a lot of it imploded during the crisis. A lot of the companies that were doing these things, one group is so-called private label securitizers. That's a jargon term. It means private companies, not Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, that were guaranteeing bonds and issuing securities based on those bonds. A great many of them went bankrupt.
Wow.
Now, not all of them. Some of those companies were the big Wall Street firms, some of which are gone, like Lehman Brothers, but many of which can continue on, although they're not in that business anymore because that business was a catastrophe. So a lot of those particular sorts of shadow banks, if we call them that, have perished from the face of the earth.
Yeah, in your book, you also talk about, you know, not only do you spend a good deal of time talking about what got us here or there, if in fact it's in the rearview mirror, but, you know, what the Fed and what the regulators' response was. What elements of the response by government, by the financial system, actually seem to have worked the best in your estimation?
I think the big three is clear. One, it was the TARP, the Troubled Asset Relief Program. Now, I have a number of criticisms of the TARP in the book, not the least of which is that it never bought troubled assets, which is what Congress thought they were appropriating that money for.
You mean the Troubled Asset Program never bought troubled assets?
No. What it was used for, basically, by Secretary Paulson, Hank Paulson was Secretary of Treasury when that passed in the Bush administration, was to purchase shares of banks. Stock, mostly preferred stock in banks, infusing capital into banks rather than buying troubled assets, which would have built up banks' capital from the bottom up rather than from the top down. Now, it's not so much that that was a terrible idea, but it was relied upon to the exclusion of everything else, and it never did buy troubled assets, which gave the TARP a kind of a bait-and-switch look, which did not really do its reputation any good.
Okay.
All that said, the infusion of capital into banks was hugely important in shoring up these banks and making sure that they survived and stopped dragging down others with them.
Okay.
That was a very successful program, which, by the way, in the end, the financial aspects of TARP turned the taxpayer a profit, not a loss.
Are there any elements of the response that either have not yet worked or may not work at all?
Well, I think the big question, and we're not going to know the answer to it until another crisis, is what's called in the Dodd-Frank Act the orderly liquidation procedure. So what does that jargon term mean? There was a lot of angst and complaining by Hank Paulson and Ben Bernanke at the time of Lehman Brothers that they just didn't have the weapons they needed, leaving them only very, very bad choices. And in particular, they had no way to liquidate a firm like Lehman Brothers, which was not a bank, remember, in an orderly manner. That provision of Dodd-Frank provides this so that the next time, whenever it happens, and we all hope it's not soon, a giant financial firm starts looking like it's going under, there are better alternatives to A, nationalizing it, which is basically what was done with AIG, or B, sending it to bankruptcy court, which was done with Lehman Brothers.
Sure.
And caused a total disaster.
Sure.
There's something intermediate, analogous to what the FDIC does with modestly sized banks.
Right. And this book, After the Music Stopped, is something that would be well advised for investors and financial professionals to keep bookmarked and annotated and right at their desk. And Alan Blinder, thank you so much for spending part of your Saturday morning to be with us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And for Cincinnati Edition, I'm Chris DeSimeo on The Money.